Mamam stahi tadascharyam sarvascharya yamaye chute ya idam mayaya devya sritya srijatyavati hantya cha. O Brahmins, do not think this to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious and infallible personality of Godhead. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he himself is unborn. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The activities of the Lord are always inconceivable to the tiny brain of the living entities. Nothing is impossible for the Supreme Lord, but all his actions are wonderful for us. And thus he is always beyond the range of our conceivable limits. The Lord is all-powerful, all-perfect personality of Godhead. The Lord is 100% perfect, whereas others, namely Narayan, Brahma, Shiva, the demigods, and all other living beings, possess only different percentages of such perfection. No one is equal to or greater than him. He is unrivaled. Shaunaka Rishi is assuring the sages of Nyaya Sharanya that this wonderful narration of how the Lord, in his most inconceivable ways, protects and gives pleasure to his devotees. Ashwatthama was so determined to destroy the Pandavas. He was empowered by material energy to relentlessly pursue the revenge that he sought due to his father's untimely death. We see in this world how people are so willing to at all costs, in the face of any risk, pursue their material ambitions with such incredible enthusiasm. Materialistic people, being prompted by the temptations of Maya, what they can do. When you look at the cities of this world, especially a place like New York City, and you see the skyline, it's almost unbelievable. So many incredible, beautiful buildings reaching so high to the sky, hundreds, thousands of them. Each one is like its own little city. Subways, you can get anywhere at any time, underground, through trains. telephones, television, telex, fax, everything is there for communication. And we think, what type of enthusiasm and determination it must have taken for human beings to create a city like this. It's hard enough for us just to fix a piece of wood that falls from the altar. It takes weeks. They built skyscrapers in that time. They have such determination to get done what they want to get done. For what? For some prestige, for some money, for sense gratification. But because they are so under the influence of Maya, Maya empowers them to have such eagerness and determination to proceed forward. Politicians, how they mobilize such massive armies, how they create such bombs of destruction. It is not an easy thing. It takes millions of hours of hard work, never giving up. And we look and think what they are doing, how they are doing it, against all odds, because they are empowered by material energy. Maya Shakti, Durga. Those devotees who have taken shelter of Krishna's internal energy, according to their desire for devotional service, they are also, in a similar way, empowered with such determination, such relentless endeavor, never giving up, willing to risk anything for Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was such a pristine, illustrious example of this. How, against all odds, with such determination, he wanted to start a worldwide movement. And even after struggling in Jhansi with no results, and struggling in Vrindavan, in Bombay, no real results, going to America after such hardships, and 1 year, no results. He was so determined. My Guru Maharaj has given me this order. It must be done. And when he met that very poor, insignificant soul on the park bench, and he asked Prabhupada, what is your mission? At that time, Srila Prabhupada didn't even have a place to stay, and he didn't have a single person who was even hardly taking interest in anything he was saying. But he explained, we have temples all over the world and farm communities and millions of books being distributed and thousands of devotees. He was going to get that if it meant his life or his death, because that was Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's desire. And through such unflinching determination, what he had accomplished in just a few short years, at such an age, and when he left this world, he had the same determination, enthusiasm, to see this movement expand and be preserved as he did when he was just dreaming of the conception in Vrindavan. Because of his pure, unalloyed surrender, he was empowered by the divine spiritual energy of the Lord. with this ability, with this capacity, with this desire and determination. And similarly, according to our desire and willingness, we will also be empowered with great determination and enthusiasm for devotional service. Everyone is subordinate to Krishna's energies. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam eko bahunam yo vidyadati kama. There is the inferior energy, maya. There is a spiritual energy, yoga maya, daivi prakriti. And there is the marginal energy, jiva tattva, tatashta shakti. We are that marginal energy. Therefore, it is our very nature to find rest either by being empowered by maya or empowered by Krishna directly. Of course, either way, Krishna is the one who is empowering everyone, because this material nature is working under Krishna's direction. Not a blade of grass in this material existence can even move slightly without the sanction of Sri Krishna. He is the Lord and the Master. In the spiritual world, Srimati Radharani, or her expansions of Sri Lakshmi Devi, they are predominating everything and everyone with the spirit of unalloyed love and devotion, and motivating everything and everyone accordingly. Sri Radharani is Vrindavaneshwari. She is the queen of Vrindavan, and everything is working under her direction, under her energies. She is the Hladini Shakti. But in this material world, the partial expansion of Sri Radha, Sri Lakshmi, appears as Parvati or Durga. And she is in control of everything and everyone. There is a beautiful story in the island of Simantadweep in Srinavadweep Dham, where Parvati was performing great yajna, great tapasya, to have the fortune of the audience of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Shiva once was dancing in such joy, such ecstatic love, chanting the holy names of Gauranga. And Parvati, upon seeing him, was asking, "What is this? Who is this Gauranga? Never have I seen you in such ecstatic love, dancing so madly." And Lord Shiva explained how Gauranga is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who comes in the age of Kali to give pure love of God to everyone without discrimination. How he's actually Krishna tasting the sweet ecstasy of Srimati Radharani's love. Lord Shiva had received the darshan of Lord Gaurasundar. So Parvati went to this place near Mayapur, and she began to perform tapasya, praying to have the mercy of Lord Gauranga. And Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu appeared before her in his beautiful, beautiful form, splendent like molten gold, the very embodiment and essence of all beauty. When this material existence is created, whatever is beautiful, it's coming from the ingredients given by the Lord, His whole material nature is simply based on the ingredients supplied by Krishna, through the energy supplied by Krishna. So anything that we see that is beautiful, it's just like one little drop coming from the unlimited mine of Krishna's qualities in a perverted reflection. And we see how the little beautiful things of this world, which are so temporary by nature, how they can completely intoxicate and infatuate our minds and obsess us with the thought of seeing it or possessing it. But those qualities are just a little spark coming from the unlimited fire of opulences embodied by Sri Krishna. So we can imagine to see the very source, the reservoir of all beauty and charm, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, the full manifestation of all divine opulences standing before us. What type of ecstatic intoxication is that for the eternal soul? All beautiful things in all the material universes, in all the spiritual planets, and unlimitedly even more beyond that, is all manifested in the divine form of Sri Gaurasundara. So when Parvati saw this, she began to cry that I have such a thankless task. I'm the goddess of this material energy. It's my duty to keep everyone away from you. It's my duty to just keep everyone entangled in the three modes of material nature. It's my duty to keep people in the prison of kama and krodha and lobha and matsarya and these other qualities of material life. It is a thankless task. My desire is that I could always be engaged directly and personally in your loving service, helping everyone to love you and to serve you. She began to weep. And Sriman Mahaprabhu explained to Parvati that actually your original form of Srimati Radharani, you are always engaged in my eternal loving service, intimately engaging everyone in the acts of pure bhakti. But in this expansion, you are having this very important service of the predominator of this material energy. But when I come in my divine form of Sri Mahaprabhu in this world, since you desire so much a place in this holy land of Navadvip, you can be Prodamaya, and you can protect the holy Dham, and you can witness all my wonderful loving pastimes with my devotees. So she became so much grateful for the mercy of the Lord, that as Sri Gauranga disappeared, she took the dust where his feet were and she placed it between the parting of her hairs, and therefore that place became known as Srimantadvip. So Parvati Durga is Krishna's energy for the material condition of life. And it is through her powers that we are all endowed with various abilities and with various inner stamina to continue on in our pursuit for happiness in this world. So Ashwatthama is the embodiment of someone who is illustrating what type of determination a materialistic person could have to fulfill his desires. He was so envious. He was so envious of the Pandavas. He was willing to risk everything to destroy them. And every time he tried, he got himself in such incredible trouble. But still, try and try again, he wouldn't give up. He had already killed the 5 sleeping sons of Draupadi. Then he was attacked. He tried to defend himself with Brahmastra. The Brahmastra was neutralized. He was captured. He was tied like an animal. He was thrown at to the ground at the feet of Draupadi. He was humiliated. He was sentenced to death. But then Draupadi, being so soft-hearted and loving and forgiving and so sympathetic toward his mother, she prayed, "Please release him." But when they released him, they humiliated him even worse. But still, he wanted the Pandavas dead. So he sent another Brahmastra, and this was meant to kill the 5 brothers of Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadeva, as well as the only surviving heir who was Parikshit in the womb of Uttara. This one Brahmastra was to kill all the surviving male members of the Pandava dynasty. There would be nothing left of them forever. That was his desire. And just see, not only did he have determination, but he had such ability to fulfill. Brahmastra is the most powerful, mighty of all weapons. And the Pandavas in this situation, they turned to Krishna. And Uttara, as a loving mother, also begged Krishna, "If this Brahmastra must kill someone, let it kill me. But please protect my child." At that time, Sri Krishna, who was always anxious to protect his devotees, performed a most inconceivable pastime. First, by his own powers, he's protected all the Pandavas. But of course, we may say that he was standing right next to the Pandavas. But what about the child in the womb? How is he going to save that child? But Krishna, he is the Paramatma. He's within the heart of every living being. He's also in and between each and every atomic particle of this whole creation. Where is it that Krishna is not to save his devotee? So from the heart of Uttara, of the Paramatma, he presided in the area of the womb, and there he covered the embryo of Parikshit, and he diffused the Brahmastra weapon. And Parikshit Maharaj, he was given by the grace of Krishna the power to see everything that was taking place. He saw the Brahmastra coming to kill him. As an embryo, he was so helpless. He couldn't even hardly move. He couldn't even cover his eyes from the glaring light. He was in the most helpless possible condition in this whole material creation, is to be in the womb of your mother. You're utterly helpless. You can do nothing. You're totally dependent. If your mother eats, you eat. If your mother eats the right food, you eat the right food. If your mother eats the wrong food, you eat the wrong food. If your mother becomes sick, you become sick. If your mother wants to kill you, you die. If your mother wants to protect you, you're protected. The child in the womb is 100% dependent. The child in the womb is utterly helpless. So when this Brahmastra was coming, glaring like thousands of suns, Parikshit Maharaj was able to see. And because of the prayers of his mother, Uttara, Krishna himself personally came to protect him. This is a very wonderful principle to understand, that we are all quite helpless. We are covered by the womb of material energy. And we are like helpless babies in this womb of material energy. We really have no power to help ourselves out of the predicament of the repetition of birth and death and the threefold miseries. In this situation, it is required that someone who is very dear to the Lord prays to the Lord on our behalf. Just like yesterday, we were discussing the beautiful pastime of the deliverance of Jagai and Madhai. The Lord was going to kill Madhai, but because Nityananda Prabhu, the original Vaishnav, the original spiritual master, prayed on behalf of Madhai, he was delivered. And he achieved the supreme mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Gaura Sundar. Similarly, when we have the great souls petitioning the Lord to bestow his mercy upon us, then it is certain that the mercy of the Lord will be upon us. And then it is simply whether we are willing to receive it, and to what extent we are willing to receive it, which has been proportionate to the extent that we follow the instructions of those great souls who are bringing the Lord's mercy into our lives. Because we cannot approach Krishna directly. Krishna can approach you directly, but you cannot approach him directly. It is simply the way he has arranged. It is through the great saintly persons, the exalted Vaishnavas, that we can approach Krishna. When we are offering to the deities on the altar, first we must approach Guru Maharaj. And through Guru Maharaj, we approach the parampara of great acharyas. And we pray, dear Gurudev, certainly you will not eat any food that is not offered to Krishna. So I'm not offering it to you to eat, because you will only take Krishna's prasad. I am only offering it to you to offer to Krishna. I am coming to you to ask for your blessing, that as your instrument, as your assistant, I can help you offer this to Krishna. Because certainly, Krishna will accept it under those conditions. Otherwise, he will not. Because Krishna accepts what is offered in great devotion. And after Krishna takes, then you will take, then I will have the Maha Maha Prasad. That is the mood of a real devotee of the Lord. So Uttara prayed, Krishna, save this child. So Krishna saved the child. Similarly, when we ask Srila Prabhupada, what is our qualification to have all of these opportunities for devotional service? Srila Prabhupada said, you have no qualification. I have created your qualifications. What does that mean? That means his prayer to deliver us was our qualification to be delivered. We may have had desire, but that was not enough. It was his prayer that intervened in our life and attracted Krishna's mercy to come into our life. And then our desire determines how much we're willing to receive Krishna's mercy coming through his compassionate prayers on our behalf. It is said, if Krishna wants to kill you, nothing, no one can harm you or protect you. No one can protect you. And if Krishna wants to protect you, nothing can harm you. Why? Because Krishna is perfect and complete. Whatever powers anyone has to try to disturb you, it's Krishna's powers coming through Durga or Maya, Mahamaya. Krishna can withdraw the powers of any materialist according to his sweet will. Krishna can manipulate this material energy in any possible way he so desires. How wonderful. When Krishna wants to endow a yogi of mysticism with an insignificant fraction of his own potencies, those yogis can perform great miracles and attract so much attention. We see, if someone can just, with a little prapti siddhi, can just create a little bit of ash. Ash has no value. Or maybe a little bit of gold. People think this is so miraculous that they travel all the way around the world just to receive blessings and worship that person as God. Krishna is the reservoir of all opulences. He is Yogeshwara. He's endowed with all mysticism. Even in the heavenly planets, the upper planets, Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, these people are Siddhadevs. They all have these powers in full. They can create planets. They could destroy planets if they so desire. And Krishna can empower an insignificant jiva with this potency. What to speak of his own potency? Therefore, when we read in the Puranic literatures about the wonderful pastimes of the Lord, sometimes we think that's not possible. When Krishna has wars, it explains, sometimes that there's literally rivers of blood. Now, we have never seen a war in this world where there's rivers of blood. We see blood, so much blood, but not flowing like rivers. But if Krishna wants to make a river of blood, he can make a river of blood out of one drop of blood, if he so desires, because there's nothing impossible for him. we were discussing about the population of Dwarka. People lose faith. How is this possible? So many quadrillions of inhabitants on a little island, living so spaciously. Krishna can manipulate his energy in any way he likes, because he is the supreme master and controller. What is it difficult to understand? Krishna possesses inconceivable potencies. Inconceivable in the sense that the material consciousness trying to ascend to a proper understanding through mundane logic or previous experiences can never fathom the supreme, unexcelled glories of Krishna's lila. Krishna is simply wonderful. How he can become a tortoise so many millions and millions of miles big. How he can lift a gigantic mountain with the smallest finger of his left hand. How he can take the Earth planet. What is the weight of the Earth planet? We have scales that can go up to 10 tons, 100 tons, 1,000 tons, million tons, billion tons, but they cannot even calculate. Has any scientist ever calculated how many pounds the Earth weighs? Have they done like this? It's an insurmountable, astronomical. How many kilograms or grams the Earth weighs. But yet Krishna can make it weightless and float in the sky. Even a cotton swab falls to the ground. But Krishna can make the Earth more weightless than a cotton swab, so it actually floats. And yet it's so heavy. We are witnessing this phenomena in our own life. And the scientists call it the law. Yes, we know how it works. It's the laws of gravity. That's all right, but who created the laws of gravity? Inconceivable. So Shaunaka Rishi is explaining to the sages of Naimasharanya that if Krishna wants to protect you, He has every power to do so. There's simply nothing to fear. You may think that Ashwatthama had sent this Brahmastra, and it's not a slow weapon. It moves very rapidly toward its target. And yet, in the brief moments it takes for the Brahmastra to go from the sender to the receiver, Krishna is having discussions with his devotees. He's talking with them, listening to their prayers. How is that? Because Krishna is time itself. Krishna is the master of time. Krishna can stretch 1 second out to thousands of years and still not disturb the time sequence of that 1 second in relationship to the next second coming. That is Krishna. We were explaining how Shukadeva Goswami told us that during the Ras Lila, the gopis were so much enjoying Krishna's company that he stretched one night out to be equal to the night of Brahma, which is several billions of earthly years. How? Now you would think, if he danced with the gopis for billions of years, then the next morning, or whenever the dance would leave, then everything around would be ancient ruins. And all of the relatives would have been dead long, long ago with all of their descendants. But after that whole night of Brahma passed, billions of years, they went home and their children were still babies, for those who were married. And all their family members, they just welcomed, they didn't even know they were out, some of them, but they welcomed them, those who did, they welcomed them home as if it was the next day, because it was the next day. Krishna can do anything, because all the ingredients of this whole creation, including time itself, is cent percent under his control. And he can manipulate any way he wants. And he's everywhere. So therefore, why should a devotee fear? If Krishna is our protector, Kaunteya pratijanehi name bhakta pranashyati, he has given his promise. And not only that, but he told Arjuna to give promise. Because sometimes under specialized circumstances, Krishna may break his promise to satisfy his devotees. But he will never break the promise of his pure unalloyed servant. So Krishna himself declares that he'll always protect his devotee, and he has his most intimate associates declaring that he will always protect his devotee. So what do we have to fear? Krishna's everywhere. He's Sat and Chit. He's all conscious of everything, in all places, at all times. And he's everywhere by his divisiferate energy and by his personal expansion. So real fearlessness means to understand philosophically, with deep faith, that Krishna is the supreme controller of all controllers. And if Krishna wants us to suffer, if we are sincerely trying to be his devotee, we should know that he's allowing it to happen because it is good for us. And eventually we are all going to die, whether it is today or tomorrow. But we should know that if we are sincerely chanting his name, serving his servants, that even in death, Krishna will protect our eternal soul. So therefore, a devotee has nothing to fear. But a materialistic person has everything to fear. And that is why fear is so predominant within this creation. And if we associate with people who have doubt in the super excellent mercy of the Lord, then we become fearful. But if we associate with those who have faith in Krishna, we become fearless. And you cannot be happy if you are in fear. So many wonderful examples. Prahlad, he was under the most difficult circumstances, but he was happy because he trusted Krishna. If you trust Krishna, whether you're healthy or sick, whether you're on your deathbed or whether you're young and vibrant, in any situation, if you trust Krishna, you'll be happy. Because you know you're in good hands. And you know that Krishna is going to do what's best. So to associate with people who have such faith is actually the means of achieving real peace and real happiness in this world. To associate with materialistically oriented souls is to just put ourselves in deeper, deeper bondage of doubt, illusion, anxiety, and misery in due course of time. So Maharaj Parikshit had the good fortune of seeing the beautiful form of Sri Narayan Krishna. And when he saw that form of Krishna, it attracted his heart so much that he could never forget it. Param drisva nivartate. He experienced the highest taste of direct perception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he was just longing to see that form again. And when he came out of the womb, although he was living in such a palatial, opulent environment of Hastinapur Palace, nothing attracted him. He wasn't attracted by any of the games the children play. He wasn't attracted by any of the comforts or the fine foods of life. As he grew older, he was not attracted by the charms of the opposite sex. He was not attracted by prestige and power, which is all at his command if he so desired. He saw that it was all pale and ungratifying, utterly, in comparison to that most charming, beautiful, effulgent form of Sri Krishna. Srila Rupa Goswami tells us in this way, that if you are attracted to the pleasures of this world in the form of wealth, or families, society, then please be careful. If you go to the bank of Jamuna at Keshi Ghat and you see that beautiful form of Govinda bedecked with peacock feather and playing upon his flute, you will lose your attraction for everything of this world. So Parikshit Maharaj had direct perception and realization of this most blessed truth. And he was simply attracted to Krishna. And from his very childhood, he would just have little deities and worship those deities and just want to please Krishna. How wonderful. Although he was just a little child, he was so attracted to Krishna, but his attraction was not to enjoy Krishna. His attraction was to serve Krishna. That is bhakti. Even when we behold the infinite sweet opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we do not desire to enjoy it. We desire to be exploited utterly, wholesale, by the desire of our beloved. We want to surrender utterly to the will of the Lord. We want to serve Him. That is real attraction. That is bhakti. So Parikshit Maharaj was always looking for every possible opportunity to do something wonderful to please Krishna. From the very time he spent in his womb of his mother to the time that the snake bird bit him, and sent him back to the spiritual world. He was the unconditional servant of the Lord. O Brahmins, do not think this to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious and infallible personality of Godhead. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he himself is unborn. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, in the class, you mentioned about a determination, enthusiasm. For the materialistic person who is determined, material energy empowers that particular person to fulfill his aim. The same way for the devotee also, find that there are many devotees who are very enthusiastic to do service, determined to do the service, but sometimes their physical health may not permit them to do that. How do you explain this particular thing? Like you, when you say that if you really want to serve the internal energy empowers you to do that service. But here you find that the physical problems may be so much that the devotee may not really be able to do to the fullest, and he repents for whatever condition he is in.
You must understand the spiritual nature of bhakti. That what you see is not necessarily the service that is rendered. The service that is rendered is the state of consciousness within the devotee. Sometimes devotees can do wonderful, wonderful services, apparently, and get tremendous results. But if they are motivated by prestige, or they are simply trying to outdo someone else out of envy, then even though there may be great, great results, it's not much service at all as far as Krishna is concerned. Whereas someone else maybe in a completely incapacitated state, but because of his willingness to utilize whatever capacity he has to the fullest extent for Krishna's pleasure and Krishna's service, that person is actually really attracting Krishna's heart by providing the greatest results. That Brahmin of South India, who had no money at all. He wanted to cook the feast for Lord Narayan. And he began in his mind to prepare because he had not, there was no means for him to cook a feast for Krishna. But just in his mind, he was so willing, he was so eager, he wanted so much to please Krishna. And when he touched the sweet rice that he cooked to see if it had cooled down enough, he burnt his finger. And when he burnt his finger, he came out of his meditation and he looked at his finger and it was burnt. And Sri Narayan in Vaikuntha began to laugh. And Lakshmi asked, "Why you are laughing?" He said, "That Brahmin, he's so poor, he has nothing. But he was so anxious to cook a nice feast for me in his mind. And he was so particular that the sweet rice was perfect, that he touched it." You must understand, quality is very important. This is what Krishna consciousness means. Krishna consciousness means to be conscious of Krishna. It's not that he just cooked sweet rice and thought, "The sweet rice is cooked, take it." The sweet rice had to be perfect, just the way Krishna wanted it. This is the way we should perform all of our service. Rupa Goswami says you must be conscientious about everything you do for Krishna. You don't just do it. You do it according to your best capacity. When you're making up the Didi's plates, you don't just throw everything on the plate and say, "Eat! It's on time! Here's all the preparations are here and it's on time, eat it!" Is that the way you offer it to Krishna? No. Not only you're on time, not only every preparation is made, but you put everything in its own particular bowl, you put flowers on it, you make sure it's nice temperature, it's not cold. You put tulsi leaf on everything, and then you come in and you ring the bell, and with great humility you beg Guru Maharaj, "Please kindly offer this to Krishna. By his mercy he will accept it." That's how you make the offer. It's a question of consciousness, not just a question of getting it done. And that's the way we must be in every activity. Service to the Vaishnava is a service to Krishna. It is said in the Shastra that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained this, that when my devotees, the greatest enjoyment I have is when I eat through the mouths of my devotees. He says like this. And Kapila Dev also says that when nice preparations cooked in pure ghee are given to the Brahmins, the devotees, he said, that is more dear of a sacrifice to me than anything else. Because I taste that food with more relish. So we're offering so nicely to the deities, but we should know that that is our duty. And it is also our service. But if we neglect the devotees, then we miss the whole point of Krishna consciousness. Because Krishna takes more pleasure eating through the devotees. When our devotees are serving prasad, you should know that Radha Gopinath is eating through each of these devotees. And if you just throw something sloppily on their plate, that's how Krishna is accepting your offering. Therefore, everything should be, if they want to mix everything up, that's their business. But your business is to serve it in such a way that it's perfect. According to your capacity, you don't just take the rice and throw it on everything else, and then those mung beans, just let them fly everywhere on the plate. Put everything in its own place very nicely, artistically, but at the same time, quickly and efficiently. That is your devotion. That is your deity worship. Every devotee is a deity because the deity is in their hearts. And when you're cooking, if you take all kinds of shortcuts and make it just, it's done. Prasad is done in time. Eat. It's not devotion. Maybe something, but you should try to cook in such a way, knowing that every devotee that eats this, the greatest offering to Krishna is through the mouth of his devotees. When his devotee enjoys it, he enjoys it more than if you offer it directly to him. So we should cook with that conscientiousness. Not that, they're brahmacharis. It doesn't matter if it's burnt. Maybe for the brahmacharya it doesn't matter, but for the person offering it, the person cooking it, it does matter. You have to give the best you possibly can. That is devotion. Not the least you possibly can. We must be very conscientious. When we're cleaning the ashram, or when we're cleaning our homes, we should understand like this. It's not just a matter that, yes, I cleaned, I did it. It was my turn today and it's done. Still a mess, but I did it. You should be thinking that cleaning the temple of the Lord is cleaning your heart. And cleaning the temple where the devotees are residing is even more cleaning your heart. Because Krishna is accepting our offerings through the devotees. It is a very neophyte platform to see the deity in the temple, but not to see the deity in the heart of the devotees. Chaitanya Bhagavat explains, if you serve Krishna, but then you disrespect his devotee, it's like going to someone and touching his feet and then kicking him on the head. What kind of service is that? So we must be very conscientious. Whatever we're doing for the Vaishnavas should be done very, very carefully in the best possible way we can. That doesn't mean we're just so slow. We should be efficient. Krishna consciousness means to be efficient as far as our capacity. We do it as quickly as possible, but as carefully as possible simultaneously. And that means we have to really concentrate on whatever we do in devotional service. Whether we're preaching, whether we're cooking, whether we're cleaning, whether we're doing our business in the service of the Lord, we should do everything with such intense concentration. So when Lord Narayan was laughing, Lakshmi asked why. He said, you see, that Brahmin has a burnt finger. He has nothing, but he's trying his best for my sake. And just because he tried his best, even though he had no material facilities, Krishna immediately sent the flower plains of the Vishnu dutas to bring him back to Vaikuntha immediately. He achieved the perfection of life. So someone may be very sick, but if that person is sincere and is according to his capacity or her capacity trying to serve Krishna and the Vaishnavas, then there's no obstacle in that sickness. For that devotee, obviously, he's trying to do more and more and more, but he can't. But if he's really trying, then that is the perfection of his life. That willingness is what Krishna accepts. And he finds great pleasure in that. Somebody else may be doing so much, but he has ulterior motives. That is unfortunate. So yes, Krishna empowers everyone according to their desire. But you cannot always understand with your eyes what is what. Hanumanji was analyzing with his eyes the service of the spider in comparison to his own. But then Krishna told him that he's doing as much as you, because he's doing the best he can for me. So then Hanuman understood we have to not understand things through our visual perception. We must understand everything through the Word of God. And therefore it is said, acharyopashanam. The one who hears from the acharya understands everything as it is. We must see through the eyes of Scripture. We must understand everything through the words of Krishna and the great acharyas. Then we understand what is what. Otherwise, with our own perceptions, we are sure to be bewildered and confused. Yes.
Foodstuffs to the deities, we offer to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master offers that to Krishna. I'm just wondering why there's a distinction in most temples. I don't know how you do it here, but you don't offer tulsi leaves when you're offering on the spiritual master's plate. And if he's offering to Krishna, why would it make a difference?
Of course, there's different within our own line of ISKCON at this time. There's various methods which are being utilized for the offering procedures, and they are correct, just different methods. It is really a question of sentiment, because, for instance, in Mayapur, they only offer one plate for everyone. They don't have like three plates. New Vrindavan, how many plates do they have? Jagannath? So how many? Seven? Six or seven? Shalagrams? Anyways, there's variegatedness. In Mayapur, they have so many deities, but one plate everyone takes. In New Vrindavan, they have every personality has his own plate to some extent. So it's the sentiment of the devotee that he's making these special considerations. But as far as the spiritual master is concerned, and as far as the devotee's consciousness is concerned, we should know that the Guru Maharaj will never take anything until it's offered to Krishna. He's offering it to Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.